Pitchers and poets, Robert Frost wrote, both have their moments. The intervals are the tough things. We need the brief getaway of a happy diversion. We need you, friend, as we have so often through trouble and tumult. During World War I, the Secretary of War made an allowance for the 1918 World Series to be played. In January 1942, FDR said you should continue through the war. He found baseball, quote, thoroughly worthwhile to take our minds off work and war. Amid racial unrest in 1968, blacks and whites celebrated together in the streets of Detroit because the Tigers won a championship. After the 1989 Bay Area earthquake, the World Series resumed 10 days later as a symbol of recovery. Played a similar role in 2001 after 9/11. You gave us a reason to hope again. In the wake of the bombing in Boston in 2013 and the hurricane in Houston in 2017, you lifted the spirits of people all the way to World Series championships. Hope is your bedrock. Games are not bound by the expiration of time. As long as teams have an out left, they have hope.
In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
And if it doesn't work out, there is always tomorrow.
We will see you tomorrow night.
This is why we need you now. It is not because you heal us. You do not end wars, solve social injustice, or invent vaccines. We need the nourishment of your routine. A ball game on the car radio. The way a game unfolds like a good book. But what Bill Veeck once said has never been truer. Baseball is almost the only orderly thing in a very unorderly world. If you get three strikes, even the best lawyer in the world can't get you off. You are our companion from childhood, and such friends have a special hold on us. Welcome back, old friend. It is so good to see you.
Tens of thousands of fans at Busch Stadium tonight. Perhaps few will be as excited as a St. Peter's woman and her son. Our team coverage continues with Lori Waters, who shows us that persistence pays off.
St. Louis, 1987. The Cards are in the World Series. The fans are going crazy, and the heat is on. And about that same time, a woman named Becky Povich was giving birth here at DePaul Hospital. What does all this have to do with this year's pennant race? Everything, because Becky decided to tell her story on the radio.
You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I've been a fan since the Unusual days, and my son was born 9 years ago during the 87 World Series.
I don't remember too much that day. He was born during the day, but that night I remember watching the game on TV in the hospital room.
Povich spoke of the cutout Cardinals on the maternity bassinets, how son Mark has become a huge Cardinal fan. Now, 9 years later, she couldn't get through to get playoff tickets, but she made a promise to her son to get bleacher seats. But that wasn't too likely either.
I told my son, when the tickets go on sale for the World Series, honey, for those bleacher seats, I'll go down there, I'll stand in line.
Usually we always think of it in terms of a father taking his son.
Well, but I'm a big fan in the family.
Pull out a TV dinner for the old man, because I'm putting in the 10th row behind the Cardinals dugout tonight.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me.
Yeah, Becky, you and Mark, I want you to go to the game, 10th row behind the Cardinals dugout for tonight's game, okay?
I'm going to faint.
Hi, JC. I'm Becky. I won the tickets.
Give me a hug,
baby. Thank you.
Pretty awesome work for a mom today.
Yeah.
And we'll give Mark's classmates the final word on the day.
Go Cardinals!
And I just want to add, too, that those tickets were JC's personal tickets. He was just touched by the story, so look what the series is doing, guys.
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell
That's
me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
One of America's great national pastimes is playing ball. Get to second base.
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again.
Baseball, baseball, baseball. Hot dogs, pizza, peanuts and beer. Screaming voices in my ear. I've been waiting since last year, Mr. Doubleday. Opening day.
Man, does it feel good to say those words? It is opening day. How you doing, folks? It's JC, and this is the 2022 edition of JC's Opening Day Extravaganza here at jcontheline.com. All right, 3:15 first pitch this afternoon. Weather will be an issue for the fans. It will be very windy. It will be a little on the chilly side, and there's going to be some sprinkles, which is going to make it a little bit of a raw day. But if you're dressed right, won't be an issue. The wind will be blowing hard to right field this afternoon, and we won't even talk about that wet snow that's in the forecast for later tonight and tomorrow morning. Things will look a little bit different. No more Matt Carpenter, no more Carlos Martinez. Not a whole lot of changes in the starting lineup, but the bullpen and the bench are going to look a little different. And of course, we have a new manager, Ali Marmol. And by the way, that is the correct pronunciation. There are some people saying Marmol, and that's incorrect. It's like marble. Just think of marble. Ali Marmol, our new skipper. We lost the battle on the DH. That's new. And also appearing at Busch Stadium in the starting lineup for the Cardinals for the first time since Game 7 of the 2011 World Series, number 5, Albert Pujols. So enjoy the show. It's time to take you out to the ballgame.
Take me out to the ballgame. Take me out with the crowd. Bunny, some peanuts, and Cracker Jack.
Double steal. Throw home. He is safe. And it's 5-0.
His pitch. Fastball hits a left. It's deep to the track. Lanes could be. It's gone. Tommy Herr hits a two-run homer. The Cardinals pull off another miracle.
Unbelievable. Get out of our way.
Where do you think Willie's going to put that most valuable player through?
Get out of our way.
Oh. He really cracked it. Way back at the wall. Adios!
You can make a play.
Swing and a long one into left field. A three-run homer by Clark.
That's a chance you take.
You talk about a redeemer.
When the heat's on you.
When he hit it, he knew it.
Good again.
The heat is on.
Smith, Clark's one into right down the line. It may go. Paul Van Slyke, and they've won the Eastern Division. That's the winner. The Cardinals got in the series. Oh,
like, as far as like stealing signs, if you think that's cheating, then we should forfeit World War II. Stealing signs is an art. It's not like you're filming them. They're over there going, throw the ball to number 10. It's like you film them and then you go through it. And then halftime, if you can steal one or two signs. I think the Houston Astros, that was a legit World Series championship. If the Red Sox and Yankees can have $200 million roided up free agent teams and go around the league like it's their breakfast buffet, then why can't they put a camera and bang on a trash can? Good for them. They finally brought a gun to a gunfight. I'm so sick of people acting like there's a Santa Claus. I love a corked bat. I love when a pitcher's on the mound and he's got half the condiments from Arby's on his shirt. I love Phil Niekro and all those guys. It's hilarious. And I've actually heard that a lot of batters prefer that they do that because if they have more control, they won't get hit in the head with the baseball and die. I'll hit 290 instead of 297 and live.
They call us the wild cards, cause at least nine innings every single game, we're rocking the Busch Ball yard. The Cards, we're the St. Louis Cards. We fans know what it's about. Our rivals gonna soon find out. Our mitts and hits are gonna beat ya. From Fredford to the fans, including all the boys and girls, we're going yard with the birds on bat, rocking the world. The Cards, we're the St. Louis Cards. We fans know what it's about. Our rivals gonna soon find out. Our mitts and hits are gonna beat ya. We are Cardinal Nation.
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 St. Louis Cards. Whatever the team situation, we're bringing the good vibration. We are Cardinal Nation. We are Cardinal Nation.
We are Cardinal Nation.
We are Cardinal Nation.
We are Cardinal Nation.
St. Louis Cardinal Nation.
We are Cardinal Nation.
Whatever the team situation.
I love baseball.
Baseball, baseball.
There's a game for you.
Baseball.
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 And a hot dog at the game beat roast beef at the Ritz.
Here's the windup.
Here's the pitch.
It's a beautiful day for a ball game.
All right, guys, I want to see some hard-nosed play out there.
Because I've got baseball in my blood.
Cardinals baseball. Baseball in St. Louis.
Well, it'll be back to the Cubs and Cardinals beating each other's brains out all summer. Here's a little tip of the cap to our friends from the North. And we start with former Chicago Cub, Tony La Russa.
There's a story involving you in Chicago on an opening day.
It's not even a mediocre career. It's a forgettable and the less we talk about a career. But in 1973, I had a great spring training with the Cubs. And so I made the team. And if you look at my, I really don't want you to look at it. But, so I'll tell you, so you don't have to check my line. In 1973, it shows, you know, no at-bats, one run scored. And what happened was opening day. It was a cold, ugly day in Chicago. We were playing the Montreal Expos, course tied in the bottom of the ninth, and Ron Santo walked. And I made the club as a utility infielder. And the manager asked me to pinch run for Santo. And with two outs and the bases loaded, Jim Hickman was walked by Mike Marshall, and my one run was a game-winning run.
It's almost like Moonlight Graham stuff here, you know, from Field of Dreams.
Yeah, it was like that, and every year I remember myself less and worse than I was. You know, it's hard for me to even remember that I could catch a ball and made it to the big leagues. All I know is I got to the big leagues, and I was a terrible player.
Here's Bob Costas.
Bobby's homer was Jimmy's birthday gift. This is from 1958.
Yeah.
And Uncle Don, that would be your Don Uncle
Elston.
Don Elston, who was a pitcher for the Cubs in the 50s. Uncle Don introduced them before the game, and Bobby Thompson's words thrilled little Jimmy to the core. "Hurry and grow up, Jimmy," he said. "We need good ball players like you." Responded 5-year-old Jimmy, "Gee, Bobby, I sure hope you hit a home run today." And the answer was, "Jimmy, I'll do it just for you."
It's brought a tear to an eye. Everybody here. I think I gave him some line about needing some sort of an operation, too.
Exactly.
That seemed to help.
Listen to this. Jimmy's 10-year-old sister Nancy says, now remember, this is about a 5-year-old child, says there isn't a day that he doesn't practice for at least 3 hours. He doesn't practice for at least 3 hours. What sort of bizarre obsession does a 5-year-old child suffer from? And listen to this. Here is an extremely telling sentence. And he simply marvels at the brilliant playing of the Cubs. Now, this sort of power of observation and brilliant, insightful analysis accounts even today for your ongoing affinity for mediocrity or worse.
Bill Murray at the ESPYs, the year after the Cubs won their first World Series since 1908.
This is the culmination of 108 years of momentum. Momentum by momentous men. Men like Rogers Hornsby, Tinker, Evers, Chance, Gabby Hartnett, Hack Wilson, Leo DeRocher, Billy Herman, Lou Brock. That hurts. Don Zimmer, Don Elston, Craig Maddox, Rhino, Sut, The Hawk, Sammy, Bob Dineer, Jody Davis, Mark Grace, Ron Santo, Billy Williams, and then I suppose you heard we won. Mr. Cub, Mr. Ernie Banks.
And now Don Elston's the pitcher. Here's Everyday Don. One of my favorite Elston stories. He threw to first base 12 times one time in the 10th inning, and on the 13th, he picked off Willie Mays and won the ball game. Look at this. Curving. It is a foul ball.
A fan is not someone who goes to the ballpark when the team is in first place. A fan is somebody who would go to Wrigley Field in Chicago last game in September. The Cubs are 102 games out, and you think they still got a chance.
Here is the Hall of Fame voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, Jack Buck, with our seventh inning stretch.
Broadcaster Jack Buck.
Hi, folks. How you doing? How do you like the color of this jacket? Holy cow! It's the Cardinals and the Cubs. I never thought I would ever do this. Let's sing this song for the greatest rivalry in the history of baseball. The Cardinals and the Cubs. A one, a two, a three. Take me out to the ballpark. Take me out with the crowd. I need some peanuts and crackers. I don't care if I will ever get back to that big room. For the Cardinals, if they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out. And it all comes.
The reason I like Harry so much is because he'll never tell me the real story about why he was run out of St. Louis. And the rumors are so great. You must have heard some of them.
Oh, yeah.
He won't really cop to the whole thing, you know, and that's why he took up drinking beer, I think, is just to forget. Or to keep himself from... But you'd think he'd have a couple of drinks and say, well, you know what really happened, Bill? Gussie! Oh, never mind, I can't tell you. He's a great one to tease. He wore some really exciting clothing. And the last time I saw him, he had a coat on that would, I mean, really keep mosquitoes off the porch. I mean, really, he's really an outstanding dresser. And he shops by catalog, and it shows.
Our friend and colleague Rick Sutcliffe dropping by to say hello.
Is he on?
There he is. Sut, it's good to have you back, son. You taking some time away from your busy ESPN world to hang out down here with us little dogs?
It's not that busy, man. It's not that busy.
Sut, who you been playing golf with?
He's here. He's in the house tonight. Bill Murray. George Clooney. You been reading about all that? You been seeing that?
George Clooney.
Yeah.
Here's Ben Johnson.
He's up there with he's up there with the Congress. He's trying to get everybody to go over there and solve that thing. I'm getting yelled at from Bill Murray in the back. I need to go.
Thanks for joining us, Sut.
He can wait.
Lord, I was born a Cardinal fan. Willie and the Wizard, Big Mac and Stan the Man. But if they're winning or losing, we give the boys a hand. 'Cause I was born a Cardinal fan.
Gilbert's got a shirt with Irvington on it. And a brother who pitches for a baseball team in some place in St. Louis.
St. Louis Cardinals?
That's the ones.
Ah, cut it out, Beaver. That's weird.
Now, Wally.
I live in California, like Dino said, and I go home to visit my folks in St. Louis, mostly for the holidays. My Uncle Earl, boy, he loves baseball, though. He's a baseball fan. He listens to the baseball game every night on the radio. He spends a whole game complaining that the announcer is not telling him the score frequently enough. That's all he wants to hear is a score. So he just shouts at the radio, "What's the score, fat ass? What's the score, moron? What's the score, fat moron ass?" Like, his idea of the perfect broadcast would be this. The score is 3-2. 3-2 is the score. The score is 3-2. One team has 3. The other team has 2. The team of 3 is beating the team of 2 by a margin of 1. The score is 3-2. Hey, folks, if you just joined us, the score is 3-2. Well, we're going to go down to the field now for a special report. Bob, what's going on down there? Larry, down here, the score is 3-2. But let's take a closer look at that score, the number 3. That's an odd number. It's also a prime number, only divisible by itself. It's 1 less than 4, 1 more than 2. That means if the team of 2 were to get one more run, the score would then be 3-3. Whoa, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Bob. Right now, the score is 3-2.
Here we are with Billy Bob Thornton. Okay, it was 2 years ago. I came out to California to interview you for the movie Sling Blade. And I walk into the room and you're wearing a Cardinal baseball hat. We started talking about the Cardinals. Probably every interview you did, including Siskel and Ebert, network shows, everything, you wore that Cardinal baseball hat. Let's explain to people in St. Louis how this got started.
Well, I've been a Cardinals fan since I was old enough to know what baseball was. That's my team, always has been. And Bob Gibson's been my hero since I was 2 feet tall.
You just came from the locker room where you got a chance to meet him. What did you guys talk about?
I didn't know what to talk about. I told him he was my hero and had a few pictures made with him, telling him I learned to pitch out of his pitching book. And he said, well, my pitching book didn't show you how to pitch. It kind of told you how, but it didn't show you. And I said, well, I used to pitch through a tire when I was a kid, and I would practice from your book. And he said, a good thing about tires, they can't swing.
Bob Dylan.
The Wizard of Oz. Osborne Earl. That's his name. Brought a whole new level to the game. We're talking about Ozzy. No, not that Ozzy. We're talking about the Wizard of Oz. The MVP. Osborne Earl Smith. He was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2002. In 2003, he was inducted into the St. Louis Walk of Fame. Let's take a seventh inning stretch.
So, in honor of this broadcasting milestone, not only for us here at The Late Show, but you fine folks in St. Louis, we've prepared a small little tribute for you. I hope you enjoy it. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ozzie Smith. Ozzie!
Christmas in 54, the greatest shortstop to ever play was born. A fleet-footed, switch-hitting, acrobat piece, the Wizard of Oz, there's no doubt about that.
Hey, Ozzie!
Catch that ball.
Hey, Ozzie!
You're the best of all. Osborne Earl, now that's his name, brought a brand new level to the game.
Hey, Ozzie!
Joe Garagiola.
What do you remember about going down to Florida for spring training?
Of course, the thrill of, you know, my first year of spring training, because I got out of the Army and joined the Cardinals in May, so I missed the spring training in 46, and we ended up winning the World Championship in 46. Then 47, I went to St. Petersburg, and that was Yogi's first year, and I snickered because Lou Jordan was behind the plate one day, and I was telling Yogi what was coming in Italian, whether it was a fastball or a curveball. You know, like Yogi needed help, but I wanted my friend to make this team, and Lou Jordan, the umpire, said, and he didn't say Italians, he used the other word, which I'll not use. Yeah. He said, if you guys are talking about me, one of you is going to get kicked out of the game. And I said, we're not talking about you.
And all you're trying to do is tip him off a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say to Yogi, if it was a fastball, I'd say Drisa, which is a straight. Storta, if it was a curveball, meaning the bent.
You're tipping off Yogi in Italian.
Of course, I can tell you that now, because at that time, he was supposed to be the enemy, but not in my book. I was going to help Yogi if I could.
Yogi, great to see you. Welcome to our studios. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Feeling pretty good.
I mean, when you watch McGuire, does he compare to anybody you've seen down through the years?
Killebrew, you know, they were almost built like the same way. Killebrew was built, was smaller. You know,
even in any way, Mickey Mantle, because Mantle, he loved to hit the
you
big
know, I
ones.
Used to tease Mickey. You know, he used to hit some pretty long balls, too.
Right.
And I said, Mickey, they only count for one. What's the difference if you hit a 300 feet of five? They only count
for
one.
Save some of that
That's
distance.
Right. I go according to the park. If it's 320, you hit 320.
Do people want to know what Mickey Mantle thinks about baseball players today, or do they want to talk about the old days, and how do you feel about it?
Well, mostly it's just what you've said so far. Like, what do I miss about baseball the most? And that's the guys that I played with. I loved them. I think that they were all regular people. We were more of a family type deal. When I was with the Yankees, Yogi and Whitey and Billy Martin, Hank Bauer, all those guys were like my brothers.
I wrote a song for your team. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, go ahead.
The 1999 Yankees, they cannot be beat. And if anyone disagrees with me, I'll burn their house down.
The fans are reacting to something that's overhead. Okay, here it is.
And the pitch to her takes the count to a ball and a strike.
That's a plane with a message trailing from J.C. Corcoran. Says the Mets are pond scum.
And some 50,000 reacting.
Alex Rasmiel, our young doctor, working at Washington University Med Center in St. Louis, Missouri, has won $64,000. Now, what do you miss about New York out there?
All
baseball teams?
Oh, yeah, I miss being able to go to see my favorite team, the Mets. Although
when they go to St. Louis, you can see them there.
Yeah, and then I have to put up with all the St. Louis fans saying the Mets are pond scum. They have that saying down there.
What do they call the Mets?
They call the Mets pond scum.
Pond scum.
It's a holdover from the rivalry that the Mets and Cardinals had in the 80s. And this year, the Mets and the Cardinals met up in the playoffs again.
It was a great
so playoff. People revived the
But why
rivalry.
Pond scum?
I'm still not sure.
You know, a guy
that.
Called me that years ago. I never knew what he meant. Pond scum.
Spring training with Lou Brock.
What is still as much fun for you about the game of baseball today as...
I think the fans are in action with the fans. This is you getting here in spring training. Players for the first time to play in the big game have to walk through the fans. And I think that it is a treat in itself. That never changes. The fan still hangs out over the dugout rail and they still ask the same question and players still react the same way. The game hadn't changed that drastic. You still got to hit and run, throw, and the bases are still 90 feet apart.
You look like you could still play.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that.
Way high fly ball in the lap. That ball carries to the track. Might leave the park. He did it. A grand slam. And it's 4-0. McGuire with number one.
Stepping in the batter's box, got a plan. Forearms larger than an average man. Break another record, yeah, you bet he can. Gonna put another souvenir up in the stands. He's the king of swing, yeah, you can't pitch fast enough. Why's the other team even need to bring their gloves? Mark McGuire, you see the pitcher shaking with fear.
Shaking with fear. Mark McGuire. Good night.
is a special pleasure for me to introduce our two home run kings for working families in America, Mike McGuire and Sammy Susser.
And you remember the day you're sitting at the piano and comes to you? Tell me about that.
Well, because I was very worried about it. It was a big 2.5 minute segment that was nothing but music. I mean, the fireworks and stuff like that, I think, came later. But I knew I had to write something. I had to come through. You know, it was a case of I just had to do something that would get him around the bases and stir people a bit for the sake of the movie. I mean, I felt like there was like a $30 million movie sort of riding on it. Maybe that's presumptuous, but I mean, it had to work. It had to. And so it scared me more than most days.
And people would say, who are real baseball fans, only a true lover of the game would have been able to conceive of that music going with that scene. Do you consider yourself a baseball fan?
Oh, yeah, tremendous baseball fan, but that isn't true. I mean, you know, Beethoven would have done even better.
Sean McGuire steps on deck. These home fans haven't seen him in a long, long time.
I'm sure the Cardinals have instructed John Hewitt, the PA announcer, to not announce McGuire quickly.
Ground ball to short. Run away, and McGuire will step in. Listen to the crowd.
Three pens and please, batting for the pitcher, Mike James. Number 25, Mark McGuire.
47,186 in attendance here at Busch Stadium. McGuire will step in. It's a 2-2 game. First pitch to Big Mac. Fly ball in the left. Look at this one go. Home run, McGuire. 3-2, St. Louis.
In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
Category tonight, baseball euphemisms for sex. Here we go, number 10. Working the rosin bag. You see, that's where we're starting. That's only a beginning. Don't worry. Hang on. Number 9, comebacker. Number 8, charging the mound. And number 7, riding the pine. Ouch. Number 6, jerking one into the seats. Well, there we go. Look at that, Ralph Kiner. Number 5, coming from behind. I have no idea what that means. Number 4, doubleheader. Number 3, going deep in the hole. Number 2, the big unit. What? And the number 1 baseball euphemism for sex, visiting Busch Stadium. Well, there you go.
And Ozzy Osbourne.
All right, Chicago. I want to hear a real, real crazy crowd start singing with me. Are you ready? Are you ready? I can't hear you. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3, and let's go out to the morning. Let's go out to the room. Take me in the room. Bring us in. I don't remember what I have to do. And I've gone out of the room. You're out at the old ball game.
Yeah. Now let's get some runs.
Yeah, let's get some runs. Come on, don't miss.
Former Cardinals right fielder John Morris.
I'm really fond of 87 when it was the last month of the season and I had come back from my dad's funeral and my first game back in Busch Stadium. Whitey threw me back in the lineup and I got a couple hits and the fans really were very supportive of me during that difficult time. That's probably my most treasured moment with the Cardinals, the support that I got from the fans coming back from my dad's death.
Quickly regarding Field of Dreams, did you guys have any idea what you had when you were filming, or did you even have any idea that you would get the kind of overwhelming reaction out of the male audience.
Of course. I never guaranteed that it would, you know, how many people would see it, but I felt that any man who saw that movie would be extremely affected by that movie. And I knew that the minute I read it.
Phil Alden Robinson directed Field of Dreams, and he told me some of the behind-the-scenes stories that went into the making of the movie.
The music was so instrumental to creating moods and really kind of complimenting the film.
Yeah, it's beautiful. James Horner is a wonderful composer, and I'll tell you a quick story. The first time that I showed the film to anybody who had not been, you know, privy to the dailies and the shoot was when I showed it to James, who was the composer. And at this point, this is in post-production, we had a rough cut of the film. I was very, very nervous. In fact, I really thought that it wasn't very good. And I just didn't know how to make it any better, and I just was throwing up my hands and saying, well, I guess this is all it'll ever be. And James came in to look at the picture to decide if he was going to score it. And I showed the film to him and his agent. And when the lights came up, the agent turned around and said, gee, Phil, it's really wonderful. I really like it. I said, oh, thanks very much. And I'm thinking, well, he's an agent. He's going to say these things, you know. And James didn't even turn around. And I'm talking to the agent, and James is still not turning around. And I'm thinking, oh, no, he hates it. And he's too embarrassed to turn around and even say, gee, thanks, but no thanks. And finally, the agent says, Jamie, what do you think? And without turning around, James said, would you excuse me for a second? And he got up and left. And I thought, oh, my God, this is just a disaster. He can't even say thank you. And the agent looks at me and he says, I'm sorry, I don't understand, I'm sorry. He goes out in the hall, comes back in a minute later, he says he's standing out there crying. And it was an electrical moment for me. And James came back in the room, wiping tears from his face, and he said, I'm speechless. And I said, gee, you don't have to say much, just say yes. And he said, yes. And that was the moment when I realized that we had something. I'll never forget that moment. It was absolutely sensational.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
And not long ago, a whole busload of us from St. Louis made the trip to tiny Dyersville, Iowa, home of the actual movie site, which, by the way, is still immaculately preserved and which hosts close to 50,000 tourists a year.
Last night, we came out at sunset, maybe five other people out here, and it was incredible. That was more like the movie. You could actually see, and the sunset over the cornfield was gorgeous.
My family and I went to Galena, and then we came on over here.
Pretty nice place, huh?
It's very nice. It gives you chills when you turn in the driveway, doesn't it?
This is unbelievable. It's a dream, just like the movie.
I drove up. We came back from Niagara Falls on a honeymoon on the tail end of it, and we came up here.
Did you know this was going to be part of the deal?
Yes, it was an arrangement.
What do you make of all this?
I think it's great. It's everything I thought it would be.
How about you?
Yeah, it is. Lots of pictures, lots of good times. It really is.
Have you been walking around out in the corn yet?
Yeah, we've been out in the corn, out in the field, playing some infield.
And so, from the pitcher's mound here in Dyersville, Iowa, so long, St. Louis, from the Field of Dreams. Well, following that trip, I met director Phil Alden Robinson.
What's your reaction to all that, and what do you think we're being told by that?
So little of what we have a chance to do is real and organic and touches the soul, and I think that people are really hungry for that. And I think that going to this ball field and fathers having a catch with their sons is a very sweet thing.
Unbelievable.
It's more than that. It's perfect.
No, it's Iowa.
It's our own
Scott Bakula. Great to see you again, man.
Great to see you, too. Good to be here.
You had Major League back to the minors. Has anybody come to you and said, hey, you know what? We maybe want to continue with the story of Gus Cantrell.
No, they haven't. They haven't. I wish they had, because I had a ball doing that movie. And yeah. There's nothing like getting paid to hang out on a beautiful baseball field and play ball for a few weeks with a bunch of guys. So
you shot it that fast. It was only weeks, huh?
Well, it was a 10-week shoot. We were in Minneapolis. We shot in the Dome up there. And so we moved around. But basically, you know, you're every day in South Carolina in the fall playing ball. It was fantastic.
Now, wait a minute. This thought just occurred to me. Okay, so you did Major League back to the minors. You also did Necessary Roughness.
Yes.
And, you know, I try never to miss a Kathy Ireland movie.
I understand that. I totally understand that.
So what, have we got a hockey movie coming at some point?
I've tried. I have hockey movies, you know, that I'm trying to develop. You know, it's hard to get those made. But
Scott, if they ever make Basketball too, you might be able to get into that.
These are some of the things that he's actually said.
Oh, really?
On the air.
I love Mike Shannon.
About what made Whitey Herzog such an exceptional manager. The key thing is he has a photogenic mind. The Cubs-Cardinals rivalry. It doesn't matter if they're home or away or vice versa. After hearing Jose Oquendo's family was settling into St. Louis, he's going to make his winter home here year-round. On a batter being called out on strikes, he knew he was out when he heard that right hand go up. Following a line out to first base, the Giants just got a taste of the medicine they've been enjoying all day. On a 1-0 lead at Wrigley Field, one run in this ballpark is like a grain of salt in the Sahara Desert. Once he said, it was raining so hard I thought it was going to stop. And finally, you can't argue with the weather.
One time I heard him say, all right, let's review the sequence of events in no particular order.
Hewlett was telling me that he was talking about Jordan and Langford, and he said, these guys are a one-man wrecking crew. And then he paused for a minute and said, together.
Yeah, the best one I remember was from when they were in New York. It was a full moon, and Mike Shannon said, boy, I wish you folks in St. Louis could see this. We can, Mike.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back with. Shame for it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Play ball!
Harry did the basketball games of the St. Louis University Billikens. So they're playing Memphis State, and somehow Elvis is listening to the game. And it's like, wow, Harry Carey, voice of the Cardinals, is in town. So the phone rings at the hotel. Harry Carey, yes. Elvis Presley, I'm a fan of yours. Would you like to come out to Graceland? The next thing you know, Harry's in the car and he's having Budweiser's and talking baseball at Graceland with the King.
And the conference has had 4 state championship teams in the last 10 years. Ground ball, this will be the ball game. There's the toss, and the St. Louis Cardinals have beaten the Chicago Cubs 13-0. Hold on. We're only in the 8th inning. I beg your pardon. At the end of 8 innings, the score, the Cardinals 13, the Cubs 3. You can't blame a guy for drag.
Harry Carey back at Bush Memorial Hospital. There is the Cubs defense.
Everybody still loves Harry. When did you kind of first realize that you had this ability to mimic this guy?
Well, when I was growing up, you know, I used to live at Sox Park in the summer. We used to do it with my buddies cracking up because he was so imitatable, because he was always saying the most outlandish things. You know, you would just watch the game and you would just repeat what he said. It's like you weren't even making up a joke. You would just say what he said and people would crack up. Like one time I was watching a game and out of nowhere he goes, hey, check out the kid in the sombrero. There's a good looking youngster, huh? I'm like, what the hell was that all about? What does that have to do with the game? Yeah. I mean, just the things that would come out of his mouth. Don't forget Friday night's midget night here at Wrigley. Anybody accompanying the legal midget gets a treat. And let's refrain from what the kids were doing last year, tossing the little guys over the wall to let their buddies in. remember, only one midget per customer.
I've got a good reason why I'm feeling so good. The cards are in town today, and they're winning like I knew they could. And the home of the cards, that's where the hopes run high. The home of the cards, where a pennant is soon to fly. With Nelson and Lou, Ted, Sal and Jerry, Leron and Carl, Julian and Billy, it's the home of the cards, where the birds are gonna sing again.
After Christmas in 54, the greatest shortstop to ever play was born. A fleet-footed, switch-hitting acrobat piece, the Wizard of Oz, there's no doubt about that.
Hey, Ozzie!
Catch that ball.
Hey, Ozzie!
You're the best of all. Osborne Earl, now that's his name, brought a brand new level to the game.
Oh, it's 212. Hello?
Hello, may I speak with Ozzie Smith, please?
Ozzie Smith speaking.
Ozzie, Jack O'Connell with the Baseball Writers in New York.
Hi, Jack.
I'm very happy to tell you you've been elected to the Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We got 472 ballots returned, and you were on almost 92%, 433 votes. You'll be the only one going. Gary Carter missed by 11. And we're very happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
When he went into the hole to pick up a ground ball and bounce back up to throw across the diamond, we were reminded every time why we love this game. And I'm sure that there are millions of people who are baseball fans because of Ozzie Smith.
There are two words that we have to use at this moment, and those words are bitter sweet. I don't know how much more energy you have left, but here he is. Go crazy, folks. Ozzie Smith.
I'd like to thank my mom for being my inspiration and my driving force. I'd like to thank my family for their support. I'd like to thank the Cardinal organization for the support and the opportunity to perform in front of the greatest fans in the world. I've often been asked, what was my greatest highlight? But I must say that being here today with my family and 50,000 of my closest friends has to be the highlight. Thank each and every one of you for traveling down my yellow brick road. Thank you.
I was in A-ball in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I was struggling. There were some things going on in California that I was worried about, and I was having a hard time playing baseball. I would strike out 2-3 times a day, no consistency, struggling in every phase of the game. So I called home, and my father answered the phone. I was hoping my mother would answer the phone. So I said, Pops, I've had enough. I'm ready to come home. I'm tired of it. Can't take it no more. And out of character, he said, Son, there's nothing here for you. He said, you want to be a ball player? Be a ball player. And from that day on, I knew that I had to give this all I had.
We don't know how well Willie can run. Maybe he doesn't know either. But he's deep. He's in there for that bat.
If he goes deep, we'll have to run fast.
Willie with a high fly ball, deep right field. Santangelo
it's
goes
gone!
Fast.
Yes!
This ball is gone! Oh, man! Ozzie, you get to go home. Your boy did it, and the Cardinals win it 2-1.
Yeah, there's a fever that you can't deny. Gotta get together with my friends to see my Redbirds fly. to Mike Shannon and Jack Buck. Yeah, I can feel it coming. One thing I know for sure is I got Redbird fever and the Cardinals are the cure. Yeah, I got Redbird fever and I know we're the best. It's a fact we're going all the way cause we're better than the rest. And I wear my Redbird colors to every inning that we play. There ain't nothing better than a good old Cardinal game. So here's to my St. Louis out there keeping up the fight. Let me get a big old Cardinals from you Redbird fans tonight. Go Cardinals!
How'd you get started? That's the question interviewers always seem to ask pro athletes, but you rarely hear anybody ask, how did you know it was time to quit, to hang them up, to retire? So I posed that question to a group of former players, managers, and GMs, whose names everybody around here knows, and to a man, they all said having to tell a player he's through is probably the worst part of being a baseball executive or manager.
Sometimes the best thing you can do is be honest with yourself.
Former Cards manager and Hall of Famer Tony La Russa.
I don't think that's my role. That's somebody. If somebody asked me, if I had a veteran in camp and he wanted to know something, I would give him my opinion. But if you don't get any playing time in spring training, you don't make the club. I'm sending you a message. At least you're not good enough for this team.
So many times you don't want to retire, but they're going to retire you.
Ex-Cardinal manager, player, and Hall of Famer Red Schoendienst.
No, they got to make room for the younger player, and when you get up in age, you're not there anymore. Your zip isn't there, and everything is, you know, going to go down the hill somewhat, and they got to make room for someone. That's the way I looked at it when they call me in. That's always a difficult thing for a manager.
Cards broadcaster Al Roboski compiled a 64-35 one-loss record in his 12 years in the major leagues. Despite his reputation, being rational instead of emotional worked to his benefit at retirement time.
And I think what also helped me was that, hey, I do have a career. I do have statistical, you know, numbers that to what I played in the major leagues, no one can take those away from me. And so instead of trying to add to those, just accept that those are already in the record books and then move forward.
Because I went through that experience because of the medical situation rather than the physical one.
It was actually doctors who made the decision for Mike Shannon, whose kidney disease cut his career short by years.
Some guys get to call their shots, that, you know, that they've been around long enough, that they know what they're doing, they know their own bodies, they can determine, well, that's it. Like Kruk, for instance, he got a base hit, he walked off the field, went into the clubhouse, got dressed, and left. It was time.
Walt Jocketty was general manager of the Cardinals for 13 years, and he agrees that having to tell a player he's done might be the worst job of being a manager.
For them, one of the hardest jobs for them is to manage, let's say, the falling star. And as a general manager, it's just, you got to figure out when it's time to tell a guy that maybe you should find a different line of work. And I had to do that in the minor leagues a lot when I was a farm director.
Go is that how it. You say it? Are you that direct
yeah.
about it?
Sometimes you are. I mean, you tell them that you had a good opportunity, and the opportunity here is gone. You might want to try someplace else, but sometimes you advise them that, you know, maybe it's time to go back to school or go back, and you're trying to be honest with them. Some guys are actually relieved because they don't want to make the decision themselves.
Unfortunately, we've seen some great ones that maybe got into a financial bind and really tried to extend their career, and they just took a Hall of Fame career and just really tarnished it by extending it.
And a lot of them, quite honestly, don't prepare themselves for after they retire, so they really don't know what to do. So I think some guys try to hang on as long as they can, but it's a difficult thing.
They're not easy discussions to have.
Cards general manager John Mozeliak.
Obviously, when you think about what you're getting at, it's the end of a line, and it's also it's a dying dream. Sometimes you have these conversations with young guys coming up, and those are very difficult because they never got to achieve what they wanted to. And then when you're talking to a major leaguer that's had a long career, the reality of the end coming is very difficult to accept. You don't want to be forced in the position to have to make that decision for them.
And how difficult can the situation get?
One was with Chris Haas, who was a minor league player but a second round pick. Ultimately, he didn't make our AAA club out of spring training, and it was a very difficult discussion. I remember we both cried.
And while there's lots of examples of players hanging on too long, Mike Shannon remembers two exceptions.
I can remember Musial and the great Ted Williams. You know, when they were 38, they had poor years as far as they were concerned. They hit under 300. And then they came back the next two or three years and they were their old selves. They stepped up their physical routine and it made them better.
Still, there are those times when that unpleasant moment comes. And maybe it does take a certain kind of person to be able to do it with grace. Cards GM, John Mozeliak.
I just think I've always had an appreciation for where I've been and what I've seen. And I really think what allows someone like myself to do this and not end up drinking or, you know, having a sense of depression is really that I like people and I genuinely want them to succeed, but someone still has to make the decision.
December 15, 2007, I was sitting in a Burger King in California, and I got the greatest phone call I've ever received in my life. It was from a guy named John Mozeliak telling me I got traded to the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, you come home, you know, your family and friends, everyone's excited for you, and you don't really understand, you know, what's happening. But, you know, I had one dream, and that was to be in this position and to win a World Series for the city of St. Louis with the best group of guys I've ever been around, the best coaching staff from top to bottom. This is amazing. But, you know, with all this talent, with the right trades, none of this is possible without the St. Louis City and all the fans. So I thank you guys. You guys are the reason why this is possible. Thank you.
Texas 7, St. Louis 5. Naftali Feliz is in the game looking for his third save of the series. The Rangers 3 outs away. Here comes a 2-2 to Therrien. Pujols is up here again in the ninth. He is 0-for-4 tonight. The pitch. And a ball lined in the left center field. A base hit. Pujols is on his way to second base and in there with a double.
But most importantly, it brings in the tying run.
3-0. The pitch. High ball 4. Texas 7, St. Louis 5. One out. Pujols at second, Berkman at first. 2-2 the count on Craig.
Got him looking 2 out. And the Rangers are 1 out away from the championship.
Now David Freese.
Big spot in the game here, isn't it?
You know, the beauty of this game, the next swing of the bat could win the game for the Cardinals or could clinch the World Series for the Rangers. A 1-1 fastball swung on and missed, 1-2.
He definitely blew one by me.
The Rangers are a strike away.
You know, last strike doesn't work out. You're watching the Rangers celebrate on your field.
But it's been pretty compelling stuff. Almost all of the games, back and forth, close. Freeze waiting. The 1-2 and a fastball hit to right field. Going back is Cruz.
Get up, baby. Get up. Get up.
And
that's it.
Pujols scores. Berkman scores. Freeze in the third. It's tied.
Oh, mercy. The Cardinals are back.
Initially, I didn't really know if Cruz caught it or not. I couldn't see, and then I heard the crowd. When I got to third, I kind of realized that, you know, we definitely just tied the game up, and, you know, we still got a chance at this.
And we're going to extra innings, tied at 7.
And now here we are in the 10th, tied at 7.
Runner at first, one out, Mott and Hamilton.
Remember, Hamilton has not gone deep yet in the postseason. Go ahead, run at first, one out.
We've always thought that, you know, in the series that, you know, Hamilton is going to, he's going to get himself one.
Be ready on the first pitch.
You know, you just don't know when.
There's a shot into right. Back at the track. At the wall.
Gone!
And it's 9-7 Texas here in the 10th. His first home run of this postseason.
Kirk Gibson, Robert Redford, Josh Hamilton.
To
two champions going at it. We fighting to try to put away a nail in their coffin to win a World Series, and they wouldn't let us get that nail in there. We'll get it in there, and they'll just pop right out of the coffin.
We were thinking, this is not looking good. The key is to get it started.
Descalso is on to start the inning.
Sometimes, you know, it works for you.
Two of our young guys really, really came through for us to lead off that inning with back-to-back hits.
And it's two on with nobody out here in the bottom of the 10th.
The attitude of the guys were, you know, we don't gonna give up. We're just gonna keep fighting.
Jay, the tying run at second. Pujols, the winning run at first. The Cardinals have gotten one back, but again, the Cardinals are down to their last out.
Drama that is made for television and the world.
And unbelievable that we come to this.
Tying runs at second. The winning run is at first. And for the second time, the Cardinals are down to their final strike.
One strike, one miss hit, one anything away from going home for the winner.
Two balls and two strikes.
As soon as you step in the batter's box, it just, the mind goes blank.
Berkman looks very comfortable.
When you're in the moment, when it's happening, you don't have that sort of perspective on it. It happens fast, and good or bad, it's over with.
Two and two. Feldman ready. The pitch and a swing and a little blooper drops into center for a base hit.
I don't believe it. Jay will score. The game is tied.
They just won't go away.
For the second time in as many innings, they get a hit down to their final strike to tie the game.
This is a heavyweight bout indeed.
To the bottom of the 11th in a 9-9 tie. Here come the Cardinals trying to win it. Freeze leading it off.
Freeze tied this game at the bottom of the 9th with a two-run triple.
Three ball, two strike count. In the air to center. Has he done it? Way back.
Everybody was a part of something special from the first inning on. People were crying, people were laughing, you know, people were hugging, and people were screaming. I mean, it had every emotion possible. That game had everything in it.
Let's go! Let's play 9 more innings right now!
We will see you tomorrow night!
It's passed along from parents to children. My father was a football fan, but my mother was a baseball fan, so I went to ball games with my mother. She passed along her sense of the game. I'll pass it along to my son.
This is a place where memory gathers. It's a place that we can return to, and it's a place that we can even imagine existing in the future. I think we have some hope that baseball might look like baseball 100 years from now.
The fun of recalling something that you saw 5 days ago or 5 years ago or a lifetime ago, knowing that that's there to be plucked back into your life in an instant. Oh God, that's rare.
Stan waits. Now the stretch from the belt. Here's the pitch. Line drive, there it is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! The run is scored! On his way to second with a double. Holy cow, he came through.
I know so many times at the ballpark when I'm sitting with my kids, I look at them and their excited faces and the fact that they love baseball just like I do, and remember the days when I was at Ebbets Field with my own father, who died before they even had a chance ever to know him. And he was the most wonderful character, Michael Francis Aloysius Kearns, with this optimistic view of life. And I know that they know him through baseball, and sometimes when I close my eyes, it's almost as if he's there and not my kids, and then it all gets mixed up together. If there is a magic in baseball, I'm sure that's what it is.
The feeling of connection, bat against ball, ball back and forth with your father or your brother,
The idea that you can throw a piece of yourself out there into the ether, a ball into the ether, and it comes back to you. This is the promise of everlasting life, that it's not going to end, it's going to come back to you.
Post-game show is brought to you by Christ, I can't find it. The hell with it.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.